you and I both invested pretty heavily and maybe more heavily even than we intended in the Kickstarter Zine Quest 3 and in zines in general. And I had just dumped another load of money on zines at Spear Witch and Exalted Funeral Press, which are two great places to get zines. And I thought, I've got to justify this somehow and pay the tax, you know, make sure I read these things, make sure I think about them, tell others about them. And so I decided to get back on the mic. What led you to that? Why did you jump in right away?
I think you captured it right there, that I've got all these zines that I bought that are probably never going to get to table. Out of the zines I got at Zine Quest 3, the only one that I've gotten to the table and ran was Ninja City, which is a hack of DCC to play ninja movies from the 80s, you know, American Ninja and movies like that. So, yeah, I would love to be able to at least justify some of these zines.
Yeah.
And we have a fair amount of crossover in what we bought. Not everything, which is good.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I bought a number of things you didn't and vice versa, so that'll be good.
I've been a fan of the zine scene for some time, and obviously I made my own zine for a couple of years. It's amazing what's being put out right now. It's almost gone beyond maybe what's a zine. You know, that some of these are so slick that they're really very polished publications. But I was just thinking about, you know, maybe we talk about what is a zine for people that I don't know what a zine means to you. For me, I just think of some bullet point items, like it's usually a small publication. I mean, the name itself suggests a small magazine, right? Zine. And small can mean small in number of pages. It can mean small in format. It can mean both. It's usually independently published. It used to be that zines were published on the cheap, meaning, you know, borrowing the photocopier at work and often cutting out images and pasting them down to the page or drawing on the page and just photocopying that. But production values have gone way up since home printing and copy shops are able to do so much. What would you add to that? Like, what are some things you think of when you think of zines?
Well, the other thing with zines are they can be anything.
That's right.
So obviously we're looking at role-playing RPGs. But, you know, the first zine I ever saw actually was a religious zine, Eastern Orthodox thing a monastery is putting out there in California. It was Death to the World, and they were trying to get into the skateboard scene and, you know, get out to the youth. So that's actually the first zine I really remember seeing. But music zines are really popular, too.
Yeah, music, skateboarding, crafts and hobby, religion, politics, poetry, a lot of literary ones, right? Indie comics. Those are all things you see in zines quite a bit. It's hard to find them. If you have a local bookstore that's not a chain, you might find some zines like tucked away in a corner. We've got some down here at a bookstore I like in San Diego called Verbatim Books. I typically think of them as digest sized, meaning, you know, like if you take a half a page of normal writing paper a page of normal writing paper and fold it in half, that's kind of the typical size, but they can go in any kind of format, right? They're typically vanity publications. And by that, I mean, they're usually one or two people putting them out. Like it's not a corporate product, right? It's not a big group of people making a zine. And they have kind of an underground or counterculture aspect to them too.
Yeah, definitely. The other thing, especially nowadays, because of internet and self-publishing and all, it's opened up. Tim Schwartz, of course, is big into zines over at
Gothridge Manor.
Thank you. Tim Schwartz at Gothridge Manor. He still puts out zines. He has a Patreon still where he pumps out stuff, and he participates in Zine Quest. But he talks about the zines that he gets. And it was a while back now, but he talked about the zine that this kid put out that his father helped him publish. And Tim makes sure to grab every copy, you know, every issue of that when it comes out, because it's so neat to see what this kid's coming up with.
Right. I remember him talking about this. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, I think zines still have a collectible nature to them that's very cool. We live in an age where, you know, what used to be special about going to a different place was that you would see things that only crop up in that place. Now, you know, you can go down to the heart of an old city, and what do you find there? You find the same old chains you find at the heart of your own city, or the, you know, it's always a Hard Rock Cafe and McDonald's or what, you know, it's a lot of the individuality has kind of been stamped out. But The other side of that is that some of that individuality that got lost before, you know, it was a voice in the wilderness kind of thing. Now, because of the internet, can find a wider audience. And so there's good and bad to this, you know, the way the speed of communications and how the internet has shrunk the world. I know I'm an old time radio fan guy. Like, I like vintage radio drama, mostly from the 60s and stuff. I don't really like the corny, like Amos and Andy crap. I like, you know, Gunsmoke and Dimension X and stuff. But I can remember when I first got into that hobby, I don't think I would have found any of those recordings outside of a few cassette tapes in the store at Cracker Barrel if it hadn't been for the internet. You know, there were all these people on the internet that were trading recordings and cataloging them and trying to find lost shows and cleaning them up. And, you know, that's just a really neat thing. And zines have fallen into that pocket too, where, you know, sometimes when I buy a zine, I'm buying it from an individual who sticks it in an envelope and sends it to me. Used to be a guy, well, he's still around, but there's a guy up in LA, Christian Walker, who did a zine called The Tolling of the Great Black Bell. And he really opened my eyes to what a zine could be, how simple it could be, right? He would handwrite a zine and draw a little map for a scenario, kind of a micro scenario on a couple pieces of regular old paper, give them the old trifold, stick them in a business envelope, slap a stamp on it and send them, right? So his whole publishing cost was well under a dollar, right? More like 75 cents or something per zine that he put out. And he wasn't even charging for them at the time. That kind of like creativity and impulse to print speed and everything is part of what I love about zines. You know, do you have any really weird zines that you've gotten over the years? From the gaming scene?
Yeah, I was going to say, from the gaming scene. Now, you know what? I really haven't got into the weird things. So maybe the oddest thing I've got, and actually it's from the same guy that did the Ninja one, and it is, I've got it right here, actually, which will be on a video so you can't see it, but it's called Darkest Dice, and it's kind of the idea of Chick Tracks. You're familiar with, like, Jack Chick and the Chick Tracks?
Well, yes, I saw this one.
Yeah, it's a game kind of based like that. And basically he did it again. And it's making fun of the Chick Tracks. But it's a role-playing game.
Yeah.
But done in the Zach Chick Track style. So the art and, you know, just the whole thing is made to, you know, emulate that. And it's three little books.
Yeah, this hits me in a... hits me in a spot that's almost beyond nostalgia. It almost, like, makes me feel a little icky inside, because I grew up in a super religious home, and not just religious, but, like, you know, kind of Bible Belt conservative. And the little store we used to go to get prizes for Good News Club, right? Mm-hmm. You know, had these Jack Chick Tracks, and I used to buy a lot of them because the drawings were kind of cool, and I liked the little tiny format. But man, they would do a serious mind screw on you. You know, the guilt and the, like, they could really mess you up. And I already had problems with my mom burning my D&D books and stuff. So, you know, I don't know if I ever had the one that he's lampooning. Was it called, what was it called? Do you remember?
It might've been Darkest Dungeons. I'd have to Google it. Now. He called this the Darkest,
right? Yeah.
Or he calls this Darkest Dice, but I think it might be Darkest Dungeons.
Yeah. So this Jack Chick Track, basically, that's hard to say, Jack Chick Track, basically gave, enforced the big lie about D&D being a satanic game, right, that came about from the guy who disappeared in the sewers, who later turned out to be perfectly fine and in another city, the steam tunnel guy, I can't think of his name, the one the Tom right. Hanks movie was yep. based on. But anyway, it, you know, basically it chronicles this girl getting into a D&D club, and then, you know, the game master, who's really a Satanist, takes her aside and says, I think you're ready for the real stuff now, and is going to teach her how to cast spells to summon the devil. And, you know,
right.
I mean, it's the kind of thing that got a lot of us in trouble back in the 70s and 80s when we were playing this game, that parents started looking at your books like, what is, you know, what kind of weird shit are you into?
Right. Yeah. It's Dark Dungeons is the Chick Track. Dark Dungeons.
Okay, Dark Dungeons.
And if you Google
it. Kind of a collector's item, isn't it?
I'm sure the physical copies are. Yeah, without a doubt they're going to be nowadays, yeah. You can get the whole thing online. You can find it, you know, if you want to just look at it. But Yeah, it's well. Interestingly enough, you can still get Chick. I mean, he's passed now, but you can still get Chick Tracks. Right? There's a I don't know what the there's Chick Publications is out there. They have their website, and you can. Oh well, Dark Dungeons is custom order only. It's only available if you order quantities of 10,000 or more at half price right now. Well, that's what their website says.
Yeah, it's probably to keep people from. It's to keep people from, who want it to, you know, laugh at it or mm-hmm. whatever, to read it for fun, to, from buying it probably.
Yep.
He wants religious stores to buy it. I don't know. Like I said, at the time, I look back and I think that guy did some damage to me. Like I've got this little kernel of guilt still about some of these things that it took me forever to get over. And you don't realize how effective, I guess it kind of reads to the power of zines, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like how effective some of these things are on an impressionable mind. Well, I probably don't want to, I don't think I have anything else to say about zines. They're a little bit like the definition of pornography, right? You know them when you see them, but they don't really have any one particular defining trait. A lot of things fit into the zine, and there's a lot of gray area. I know I first got back into these into the gaming zine scene when the Dungeon Crawl Classics guys started putting out zines. What's the Gong Farmer's Almanac is the name of theirs, right? And the fans basically put it together and edited it. And I see those at Gen Con on the racks, and I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. For me, they're just the right size amount, just the right amount of information, right, to get your mind going on a particular idea. Like I said, they feel kind of counterculture and illicit, and that they're just fun to pick up and read, and they're very handcrafted and individual, and I don't know, love everything about them. Which is why now these days, I don't know about you, but like I just dropped a bunch of money on some more zines, and some of them I was paying $15 for.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, okay, I'm almost to the price of like a full on supplement or something. You know, it gets to be quite a bit of money for what it is, but I'm very happy to pay it.
Well, yeah. And that brings up a good point now. So the scene, because it's become so popular with Zine Quest and everything and everything else,
right.
We have, you still have zines that have the spirit of what we've always thought a zine is, you know, that kind of punk rock, you know, yeah. individual person yeah. doing it. But we also see the more corporate kind of zines in there too, and more almost like cashing in things, and where it's more of a status symbol to own the zine and than it is, you know, just to get the content out there.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you think the range, I think on one side you've got Wizard Funk,
mm-hmm.
which is done by Thaddeus, right? Patches, we call him. You know, it's fairly basic. But on the other end of that, you've got some others where they've gotten into like risograph printing and foiling and, you know, hand stitching and some of these things that are like really over the edge on the other side too. And they are very collectible. A lot of these only have a short run and they're hard to get after that because usually zine makers almost never get paid, right? Like by the time they put it all together and hand it off and ship it out and everything, and all the time, I mean, certainly not for the time they put into them. They probably never break even. They probably sometimes break even on the cost of everything but their time, maybe.
Well, and I don't think, though, that historically, at least, nobody made zines to make money, right? You did it to get the ideas out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of the litmus test of it, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I was doing it, when I actually did get to the point where I felt like I was making money, I started to feel uncomfortable and shut it down. It spooked me out a little bit. I was at the height of Plundergrounds. I was making a little over 400 a month. Now I was turning almost all of that around and paying artists to put art in the zine, but it was getting to the point where I was getting more than, you know, and I had a backlog from the early days when I was sending them out where I was making a loss, you know, it had taken out of pocket on the art. But once I got flush on that and started making a little money, I started feeling like I don't want to get into a tax situation, and it became more of a job than a you know, a hobby.
Right.
And I backed off of it. Probably shouldn't have. It was really fun, but also a lot of work.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll let you have the rest of your evening. I heard one of the dogs there. I call that bonus content. Was that Maddie or was that?
They were, but you probably heard them both scratching, and the whining was Maddie, because I've got the door shut. They want to be in here.
Attention.
And, yeah. So
my dog wants in and out in my room, on my office, quote unquote, my guest room right now where I'm working from. He wants in and out all day, but all he does is come in and sleep.
Right.
Right.
So well, they just want to be near you. Dogs are social animals. So
yep. That's true. That's true.
Well, Ray, thank you.
He also thinks I might drop food, which I do sometimes. So.
There you go. Bonus. So thank you for inviting me to join you on this. And I look forward to maybe some future episodes. I also look forward to other future guests that you have and listening to that.
Yeah, for sure. I enjoyed talking to you. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, anytime.